write the information on the sheet on the bulletin board. And our main speaker tonight is Sean.
How you doing? My name's Sean. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 5th, 1988. My sponsor is Michael H. And I am a member in good standing, and I like saying that because I was never a member of good standing anywhere, of the Sunday morning Safe Harbor group, 9:30 speaker discussion meeting down in Rumson, New Jersey. So if you are ever down on the Jersey Shore, come on by. We'd love to have you. That's a mile from Springsteen's house and right across the street from a place called Crazy's. And I think there's a message there. It's really good to be here. And it's really good to be sober. And I'm really glad you guys are here. And I mean that. That first word, the first step, an important word. It's also a powerful word, the most frequently word used in the first 164 pages. And I had to learn the hard way how powerful that word is. I want to stop for a minute, and I want to thank Cynthia for asking me to speak, and Walter for escorting me over here. They're a big part of my network, and having a network is important for me. You know, one of the things I've learned about the pattern in my sobriety is that I lean on the people until I can lean on those steps, until I can lean on a God of my own understanding, and for that I am eternally grateful. My sponsor, I told him I was coming here today, and you know, I got up in the morning and I prayed, and it's funny how my prayers change. My prayers in the beginning used to be, save me, you know. Then they started to evolve into, help me. And this morning in the shower, my prayer was, God, please use me. And I hope I'm able to do that today. My sponsor had me, he reminded me to read October 2nd in the daily, the 24-hour a day book. And what it talks about is what makes a great or a good and effective AA speech. And it's not a polished speech. You know, what comes from the heart reaches the heart. And Adam and Sharon really did that for me tonight, so I want to thank them both for speaking. And so, you know, I'm in the shower, and I'm thinking of my favorite subject, me. And, you know, the question was, am I going to speak for effect, or am I going to speak to be useful? And I know that when I try and speak for effect, that's my ego. And I know when I try and speak to be useful, that's a God of my own understanding. So I hope I'm able to do that tonight. Anyways, this was never in my plan. You know, I wasn't on my bucket list. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I wanted to, you know, summit the Seven Peaks and camp out under the moonlight in the Grand Canyon and, oh yeah, I want to join AA. Yeah. But I guess that was in God's plan. And what I continually learn in AA is that God's plan is always better than my plan. So anyways, I was introduced to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous by the state of New Jersey in 1982. No we. And by the way, you know, we to me means more than me. You know, and when I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I guess subconsciously my ego is punctured and makes room to get the mix right. And the mix for me is we, which is more God and others. And, you know, that wasn't the case in 1982, you know, and I went back out and drank. And I was reintroduced to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1984 by the state of Pennsylvania. And all me, no we. You guys get the picture. And I was yet reintroduced to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1986, again, by the state of New Jersey. And but for the grace of God, and I guess today I'd call it the state of desperation, I was reintroduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, for God willing, the final time on February 5th, 1988. And I had no plans to join Alcoholics Anonymous on that day. As a matter of fact, I had other plans. I was living over on 53rd and 8th, and I had a sister coming up from Villanova with four sorority sisters. And, you know it. You know. But what happened on that morning was I woke up and I uttered the four magic words, God, please help me. And help started to show up. And I didn't recognize it at the time. I called home and I told my old man, I said, Dad, I think I have a problem. And he said, oh, yeah, what's that? And I said, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he said, Sean, we know you're an alcoholic. And I said, you know, can I come home for the weekend? And I'm going to try and get help. And these angels started to show up. I didn't know that's what you called them then. But I got down to Penn Station, and I ran into a guy named Brian H. And I used to party with Brian H. And he was sober, and he was happy. And I had never met anyone who was sober and happy. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know those words could coexist in the same sentence. And, you know, Brian just said, dude, are you done? And I said, I'm so done. I can't stop drinking, and I want to die. And he said, oh, that's good. And I'm like, you don't realize, man, I really want to check out. And he said, oh, that's great. And today I understand that as the gift of desperation. My scorecard read zero, you know, as it says in our book. I also want to welcome all those people counting days. You know, I remember exactly what that was like. And, you know, I don't remember my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I don't remember what was said. But I remember the way people made me feel. And it happened again here tonight when I walked in. You know, I was made to feel warm and welcome and safe and protected. And that made me want to come back. And a little bit later on, I remember a guy saying to me, you know, listen, there's good news and there's great news or bad news. I said, all right, well, what's the good news? And he said, you never, ever have to feel this way again. And, you know, I felt that soul sickness and I felt that pain that we all felt or feel currently coming in. And I said, all right, you know, that's very attractive to me. So what's the bad news? And he said, oh, we're your new friends. Well, anyways, on February 5th, 1988, that guy Brian H. said, listen, you know, he didn't lay a big book quote on me. He just said, this is what I did, here's where I went, and here's who you should ask for. And that was a Friday. And I had no job, no girl, no driver's license, no car, and I only had a place to stay for 48 hours. And do you know that whole weekend, you know, he had told me, look for a guy in a blue and white rugby shirt. And all I could think of for that whole weekend was, how does he know the guy's going to wear a blue and white rugby shirt? Yeah. And that guy was there on Sunday night, and I am forever grateful that that guy was willing to practice the 12th step during that short window that I was willing to take the first step. And that guy reached out his hand, and I grabbed on. And great meeting. Don't remember exactly what was said, but I did feel warm and safe and protected. And at the end of the meeting, he said, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no, I don't. And he says, great, I'll be it. He said, go to the back, grab that book in the back, and I'll give you a ride home. And I went to the back of the room, and on the literature table was a thick blue book and a light blue, thin blue book. Which one do you think I picked? And the joke was on me because the 12 steps are in both, and I love both books. You know, they have helped save my life. Anyways, we got in a car, and he said, listen, I signed you up for this home group, and I signed you up for a commitment. And I was pissed. You know, he did it without my permission. But the point being is that, and I've learned this lesson over and over and over again, is that I tend to balk, surrender, take the action, and get the results. And by doing what I don't want to do, you know, I've always benefited. And on the ride home, he said, let's pull over, let's read the first step. And it happened to be out of the 12 and 12. And he gave me a homework assignment. Said, I want you to write out inventory, 10 examples of how you're powerless over alcohol, and 10 examples of how your life is unmanageable. And I did it that week, and I showed up, miraculously, the following Sunday for my coffee commitment. And he said, all right, here's the big book. I want you to read the first four chapters. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, are you an alcoholic? And I'm like, well, you know, I've been in and out of AA 3 times, and, you know, I'm here, aren't I? And he said, Sean, that doesn't make you an alcoholic. It's important you understand what the problem is. And I did. I learned it real quick that I have an allergy and an obsession, and I cannot drink safely. And I didn't fully understand what that meant until I had that service commitment. And I was obviously making coffee with another guy, and I said, how do you know you're an alcoholic? And, you know, he told me. He had his answer, which was he can't guarantee his actions after the first drink. And I identified with that. And then he said, well, are you an alcoholic? And I said, you know, I don't know. I think I am. And he said, let me give you a little help. Non-alcoholics don't wonder if they're alcoholics. And that was very helpful. Yeah. And the journey began. And we got to step two, and it was pretty simple. Came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. And what happened for me was, you know, my sponsor helped me understand that step one was the problem, 2 through 12 was the solution. And he made it really simple. You know, he said, Sean, you have a 4-letter problem. And I'm thinking, B-E-E-R. And he's like, no, S-E-L-F. 4-letter problem, S-E-L-F, 3-letter solution, G-O-D, and a 2-letter path, A-A. And before I could start fighting him on the word God, he said, and if you have a problem with God, just put an O in there and go with good. And that made me, you know, open. He also had me read There Is a Solution in the big book. And he gave me a homework assignment to look up the definition. And, you know, I was arrogant. I'm like, you know, I know what that means. And I looked it up, and I reported back the next week. And it was pretty simple. It was a method by which of solving a problem. And he told me, yeah, but did you look at the second definition? And I hadn't, so I went back and I looked at it. And the second definition was 2 or more elements mixed together. And I get that today. That's the we. You know, that's more God, more others, less Sean. We got to step three, and he said, Sean, what are you doing this weekend? And I'm like, I'm doing whatever you're doing. Yeah. He said, great, pack a bag. We're going up to St. Paul's Abbey in Newton, New Jersey. And I was highly motivated to get out of my parents' house. And on the way up, I said, hey, Tom, you know, what do we do up there? And he's like, oh, it's awesome. You're going to love it. And I'm like, I had asked 2 or 3 times, and I wasn't getting a direct answer. So, you know, as us alcoholics, I got suspicious. And I said, you know, level with me. What are we doing? And he said, it's awesome. It's a bunch of guys, and we pray. I'm like, let me out. And he also said, we pray with an E, pray with an A, not an E. And I didn't know what that meant, you know. But I learned when I got up to that retreat, because that's what I used to do when I was drinking, is I used to pray upon people, places, and things to try and please myself. And I tried to please myself so much that I got sick and didn't want to live. So I got it. We got up there, and it became very clear to me that I was the indigent, the last guy in. I got the last bed on the third floor next to the heater that hisses, and my roommate was a guy named Jack the Whack. And between our beds was a nightstand, and on that nightstand was a chia pet. And I'm like, what is that? And he said, oh, that's my higher power. And I got to tell you, I raced down to dinner, and I let Tom have it. I'm like, what are you doing to me? I got the last room, you know, bed next to a heater that hisses. Got a guy named Jack the Whack, and he's got a chia pet. You know, what's up? And he said, Sean, that's okay. He's in a lot better place than you are. And, you know, he was right. And I struggled in the beginning with spirituality. And I'm really grateful that people let me find my way, you know, to develop a relationship with a God of my own understanding. And people ask me questions along the way. You know, they said, well, has the obsession to drink lifted? And I said, yeah, you know, it has. That had never happened before. And then they said, well, who did the lifting? You know, and that piqued my attention. We, on that weekend, he also talked about step three. It's a decision. It's not a debate. It's a commitment. It's not a controversy. And was I willing to say yes to move forward? And we got to step four, and, you know, I was interested because I always used to get those questions the day after. You know, why'd you do it, and what were you thinking? You know, and I never had the answer. You know, we got down to causes and conditions, and we talked about incomprehensible demoralization. And I know, we all know what that is. And he asked me to talk about it. And you're only getting two stories. One is, beer is great, sex is fun, we're the class of 81. And in a blackout, I thought it would be a great idea to spray paint that on the church steeple of our town. And the problem was is that the next morning when the police showed up, you know, I denied it. And they informed me that I had autographed it. Anyways, in that fourth step, you know, what was brought to my attention, you know, he had me write it out in columns and eventually read it to him in rows in step five. But the eye-opener for me was that it was news. I mean, seriously, it was news to me that I was selfish. It was also news to me that my life was run on 100 forms of fear. Not getting what I want, losing what I have, or getting caught doing what I know I'm not supposed to be doing. And it was very relieving, you know, to go through that process. We got to step five. It was real simple. You know, I read it to him, and he helped me put a name on each one and understand what my part was. And he laid it out in a real simple format. You know, whenever I was feeling pain or uncomfortable, he would let me know I had the paggles, and I didn't know what the paggles were. And he said it's the seven deadly sins: pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, sloth. And that was very helpful to me, because when I got to six and seven, I then knew what to ask God to remove. And what a joy it is tonight to be speaking with Sharon. Sharon was my first client when I worked at Playboy magazine. And, you know, what can I tell you about that that's clean and not off color? But I can tell you this. I found myself in early sobriety in a healthy relationship, you know, which was a miracle for a guy like me. It was like a loyalty of a dog in heat. And I was committed. I understood. I had written the relationship ideal, and I knew about commitment. I knew about communication, and I knew about compromise. And I'd been at a men's meeting, and they were talking about character defects, you know, the seven deadly sins, and said, okay, who in here is interested in getting rid of lust? And nobody raised their hand. And one guy in the back said, how about 65%? And the reason I tell you that is I found myself at the Playboy Mansion. Obviously, women were available and booze was available. And I had learned to say, you know, the resentment prayer or the character defect prayer, specifically the lust prayer. You know, God, thank you for showing me the truth about myself. Please remove this from me so that I can be useful to you and others. And it worked. And I got back to my hotel room, and I felt amazing. I was true to my God. I was true to my girl. I was true to myself. And I got to tell you, if I had told anyone that I grew up with, they would have been like, what's wrong with you? Get back in there. You know? But the peace and the freedom I felt, you know, who knew an honest life is such a good life? We got to the eighth step. It was really simple. Read it, you know, listed them right out of the fourth step. And now, later, never. We got to the ninth step, and this was kind of, it really moved me. The promises started to happen in my life, you know. And my sponsor explained to me that an amend is an improvement. Right? And it was really simple. Forgiveness would equal freedom. Right? And I had to get right with the people I had wronged. And I did it just the way it's laid out in our book. And the first one was my mom, you know, who, by the way, was on the never portion of the list. And, you know, she wanted to go shopping at Annie Says, and she wanted to have lunch at McDonald's, you know, which is any mom, you know, would want with her son. And when I started to go through it, she said, stop right there. Show me. Don't tell me. You've always been a good talker. And then the second thing that happened was I went to an employer that, you know, flex time was not invented in the 80s, but I practiced it. And my sponsor helped me see that I was robbing from him. And I called it flex time. He called it truancy. And I went and I made that amend to that employer. And as only God would have it, you know, years later, I get a call from him. And he asks if I'll meet him at the fog lifters meeting on 55th and 5th. And he had become part of the fellowship. And he asked me, would I come down to Perry Street and speak at his meeting? And I got up in the morning, I was in the shower, and I'm like, maybe he's going to buy me lunch, you know, maybe he's going to make an amend, you know, all these designs and schemes, and that's not what happened. What happened was I got down there, and there was a young woman very, very upset about the actor that had passed away, you know, the week or two prior, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I said, you know what, I think she should speak. And she did, and she blew me away. And what she said was 2.5 million people die every year from alcoholism and addiction. And that boils down to 7,000, you know, every day, 300 an hour, one every 12 seconds. One just died. Another just died. And she said, I'm really glad it's me. Aren't you glad it's not you? And that just blew me away. We got to the 10th step. Great step. You know, God allows U-turns. You get to do your day over again. It's also better than Ambien, you know. When I write out my 10th step, I sleep pretty well. We got to the 11th step and sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. And I used to go to this meeting, commuters meeting, over at St. Francis Assisi on 31st Street. And Father Michael Judge used to lead that meeting, and I loved it for a lot of reasons. Number one, I had a hard time remembering the 3rd, 7th, and 11th step prayer. And they laid it out so simple for me. They said, when you get up in the morning, why don't you just say, hi, God. You know, take me where you want me to go, have me meet who you want me to meet, and have me do and say what you want me to do and say. And I've done that every morning, you know, since I met that man. We got to the 12th step, and just a quick story. It was a cold December night in 1984, and I came to out of a brownout or a blackout, and I'm on my feet, and I have some of those horsemen, specifically, you know, terror and bewilderment, and I'm looking to my left and I'm looking to my right, and I realize I am where I'm supposed to be, which is the Tower Theater, and we're going to see a show, a concert, and I look down to my left, and there's 11 of my college buddies, and I look to my right, and there's the usher smiling, and I look at my hand, and I got a tall boy, and I'm like, whew. And then Paul Hewson gets up to introduce a song, and he says, what can I give back to God for the blessings he's poured out on me? What can I give back to God for the blessings he's poured out on me? And I thought to myself, I don't want to hear this stuff. Just play the song, right? I mean, that's where I was. And as fate would only have it, years later, I'm at another show, same band, and he gets up and he says the exact same thing. You know, what can I give back to God for the blessings he's poured out on me? What can I give back to God for the blessings he's poured out on me? And I know exactly what he's talking about. And before my first sponsor passed away, he was Lazarus. He kept coming back from the dead. And he asked me, he said, Sean, do you know what the 3 most important moments in an alcoholic's life are? And I'm like, Tom, is this multiple choice? You got to give me the answer. I don't know. And he said, the moment you're born, the moment God got you sober, and the moment you understand why you were born and why God got you sober. And I understand that today. You know, my primary purpose is to stay sober, show up for life, and help others. It's not my only purpose. You know, I know God wants me to be happy and to use those gifts that he gave me. But I don't know much, but I do know this, that I continue to find all my answers by losing myself in the service of others. I get to meet myself over and over and over again. By meeting other alcoholics. So I'm really, really grateful to be sober. Want to thank God for AA and thank AA for leading me back to God. And I hope you all have a wonderful night. Thank you.